hailing frequencies are open. Welcome to the Infinite Potato Alliance.
Welcome to That Star Trek Podcast.
Are you out of your mind?
Watch and learn. This is going to be awesome.
This is your place for detailed analysis and speculation of all things Trek.
You are Starfleet to the core. I can smell it on you.
Join us as we dive into the newest content coming available, as well as retrospectives of the past series and films.
Do we need a mutiny today to prove who we are?
Now, on with the show.
We've only just begun.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to an all-new episode of That Star Trek Podcast, your place for a detailed analysis and speculation of all things Trek. My name is Sean Ray, and I'm still recovering from my partial assimilation. Joining me tonight in the historic Infinite Potato Studios, we have Dave. How's it going, sir?
How you doing, man?
Thanks for having me. I'm doing great. Scott's here. How are you?
I got lost. I haven't been here in a while. I forgot the way, but I made it.
John's here as well. How you doing, sir?
Kevin's not funner than me.
As a security guard, I got to say that guy's bad at his job.
You have one job. Don't let people in.
Rick is here as well. How you doing?
I lost what I was going to say. I'm fine. How you doing?
All right. So tonight we will be discussing the third episode of Star Trek Picard's second season, which was titled Assimilation, written by Kylie Rossiter and Christopher Monfett, and directed by Leah Thompson, which... I feel stupid that I didn't put two and two together that Leah Thompson was directing the time travel episode, which is cool. And I mean, when you think about it, but I was like, oh yeah, of course she is. So, Picard and crew travel back to 2024. Yeah, she did. They travel back to 2024 Los Angeles in search of the one person who can help them identify the point at which time diverged. Now again, I ran into Dave at Hobby Lobby. We kind of talked about this a little bit, but
for hours.
Why do you guys think that they decided to make it Los? I mean, I know they probably did it at Los Angeles because that's where they were, and it was cheaper. But time travel in Star Trek has almost always been San Francisco. They almost always go back to San Francisco. I know they went to Los Angeles in that one Voyager episode where they went to 1996. Mm-hmm. So that might be why that they just were like doing an homage to that. And I wonder if Sarah Silverman is going to show up at some point.
Yeah, but always gone back to San Francisco every time. Like Enterprise.
But for the majority of times that they've done time travel.
I realize that I'm on a Star Trek show, but you're really overthinking this, man. They just went to Los Angeles.
I mean, Cisco went back to San Francisco. Picard, when they went back to
that doesn't mean that's the only place they can go.
Right. In Star Trek 4, they went to San Francisco.
I understand.
So, it's probably easier to, like, you know, they can, that way they could say, like, look, we have our own story we want to tell. We're going to have our sanctuary district. We're going to, you know, make references to the Bell riots, but we don't want to deal with that shit. We got our own story. We don't want to run into Avery Brooks running around pretending to be Bell. So just, you know.
And also, why
do they always keep going back to California?
Now, I know why they go back to California, because they don't want to do a lot of, they don't want to travel anywhere.
Yeah. Well, that's why they're in
Plus,
Los
it was
Angeles.
COVID. Well, it was LA. COVID, so they probably didn't want, yeah. Have you guys heard the theory that Cisco is a watcher?
I have.
That would be phenomenal.
I mean, they do make a good case for it, but I don't see it happening.
All right. You know, on the last show we did, we talked about recasting Trek characters. I don't think you can recast Cisco, and there's no way in hell Avery Brooks is coming out of retirement.
You can absolutely recast Cisco.
Yeah, you can.
No, I've heard that Avery Brooks has been looking to get back into doing some acting.
This acting?
I don't know. I don't know if he wants to do Star Trek again or not, but why not? I mean, it's a paycheck.
Depending on how you parse or interpret what Sarek Lofton has to say, then Sarek has indicated that, you know, Avery Brooks, if the script was right, if the story was right, if the reasoning was right and solid, then he's not opposed necessarily to the idea of coming back. Which is the most softball way of saying maybe.
Yeah.
Which of course, scores of Trek quote unquote news outlets come out and say Avery Brooks is coming back to Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love it if he would. As long as he wasn't sitting at a piano and saying "bing," that was weird.
I'd be fine with it. Sisko could do that.
I could headcanon it as he spent a lot of time with the prophets and they drove him a little crazy. Yeah,
he doesn't do our reality linearly anymore.
Yeah, just have him staring at Picard and pounding a chord on the piano and doom and doom. That Shatner interview was eight shades of crazy.
Sisko. Yeah.
So weird.
But Sisko's my favorite captain. I love Avery Brooks.
Oh, so much. I love
him. I do too. I would love to see him again. I would love for them to bring him back and say, well, you're here in you're on Earth in 2024. Sanctuary districts are a thing. Sisko exists in that time, which means, in a sense, he has always existed there, so perhaps it's some prophet Sisko presence in 2024 that is the Watcher, but I find it very doubtful. I would find it more believable for them to say, oh well, in 2024 Guinan was in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still putting my dime down on Soji, because I don't think they want to have to for like five episodes.
They don't have to de-age her. If she can, if they can magic it away to where, I can keep up with humans, she can de-age herself. So in 2024, maybe she's old.
Mm-hmm.
She has friends there. She olds herself. Like, she might not even be Elorian for real. Q says she was a damn imp.
And I mean, we don't know that. It would be five episodes. It may be a scene, but
I want the Watcher to be us, but I think Q as a proxy for us, but like a never ending story kind of thing where Picard like looks in the camera.
That would be great.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
And
then Picard fades to white and he's back in his time.
John blew my mind, and now I want that. I'm sorry, Sean. I've got to interrupt you. But John just stumbled upon something fantastic.
That would be great.
You can do it.
We have seen these videos and these pictures of people with opaque eyes, that they have no pupils in their eyes and stuff, and it's all white. And I'm wondering if we're never going to see the Watcher. The Watcher is just going to be talking through these people that they possess these people momentarily to say something or whatever.
That sounds like some bullshit they would do. That's probably what they're doing.
You know who could possess a person and white out their eyes and speak through them momentarily?
Whoopi Goldberg.
One of the prophets.
Oh shit.
Yeah, they could. Yeah. It could be Sisko, we just never see him.
So, the favorite thing I've heard that came out of the last episode, not this one, but the previous one, is the nickname that's been going around the internet, Skull Dukat.
I thought that was a missed opportunity. I really thought it would have worked out better if that had been Gul Madred.
I don't think as many people would have known that name.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, I don't.
Five other people would have got it. Mm-hmm.
There are four others that would have gotten it.
You know what? I listened back to the episode that we recorded a little while ago, and I regret at the end we were talking about how the Borg ship looks like a vagina, and Sean's like, oh, Picard's repelled by that. What I should have said was, there are four lights and a button.
All right, so this was another superb episode. I don't know what it is, because I really like season one of this show, but it just seems that even though this season is still young, I mean, we're only in episode, this was episode three, but so far it's better than season one. It's there's plenty of time to mess things up, but the slingshot sequence I thought was really good. Splitting everyone up was a good idea, even though they do it on purpose. It just happened when they beamed down. And then when Rios wound up in the hospital, I looked at my wife and said, he's the checkoff. and I did like that brief glimpse that we got of Q on the ship before they went back. And that's what I remember about Q the most from TNG, is when he would just pop up and just kind of torture Picard for a minute and then disappear. Because we're only three episodes in. We've really only gotten one big scene with Q. And so I really want more Q, but you know, I guess less is more. But I really want more.
Less is less. I want Q.
I want more.
I am fine with the amount of Q at this time, because Q sets up the game and then he lets you fumble around and try to figure it out. And he's like a goalie, or he's like Q is like built the ultimate escape room for Picard. And so, like, he lets him figure it out on his own until he sees that he's in trouble. And can I have a hint? And Q pops up. Look around you, Picard, and then he'll disappear again.
Yeah. I like the way you said that. It cracked me up. You're like Hedonism Bot on Futurama. I am fine with the amount of Q at this time.
It is acceptable.
Now kindly violate the pheasant.
Rick, what did you think of the episode?
I enjoyed it. You know, it's very much a middle episode, and I like what they're setting up. I like the, you know, of course this is television, so of course, you know, Rios falls in front of the clinic run by the most gorgeous doctor in all of Los Angeles, or I guess everybody in Los Angeles is gorgeous.
He didn't fall in front of the clinic. Yeah, he was picked up and taken there.
Well,
he found him near enough.
The point is that she was gorgeous.
Yeah, you know, and she's like 25 and has 14 doctorates.
LA.
But you know, I love that whole storyline.
She got them all online.
Raffi and Seven at the tower was hilarious. I'm not in any way concerned about.
We're here to capture an image.
time travel story. So, you know, there's a big reset button at the end of this episode.
But were you surprised that they actually killed him?
No.
I hope they leave him dead. I like the guy. I need stakes, though. Damn it.
Yeah, it would be nice for there to be some real stakes.
Not Elnor.
But
I'm good with it.
Elnor. I've enjoyed Jurati in one sense or another, ever since the beginning. But I think she was just awesome in this episode.
Yeah.
And when the Borg Queen was like, "You've done something really dangerous. You've impressed me." I was like, "That was freaking cool."
Yeah. It was a nice line. It was well done, and Allison Pill stepped it up in this episode for sure.
Yeah.
She did a great job.
The only one I'm less than thrilled with right now, to be perfectly honest, is Picard. He just kind of seems to be floating along, and everybody else is doing all the heavy lifting.
I was a little irritated that on a show called Picard, they go back in time and everybody beams down except Picard. And Jurati, but he stays on the ship. I'm like, the show is named after you. You've got to be in the middle of the action.
No, he doesn't. He wasn't on TNG.
Well, the show was named after him on TNG.
But it was his show.
Wasn't it?
No, it was Data's show. TNG was very much Data's show.
If you look at the movies, it was just Picard and Data's show.
Yeah, the movies was very much, let's find out how to turn Picard into John McClane in every movie. but
which was weird. By the way, I don't care what Scott says. If Jerry Ryan asked him to go up to the top of the tower, he would let Jerry Ryan go up to the top of the tower.
If she asked me to go up to the top of the tower, well, probably.
No.
But she's like, can you let us go up to the top of the tower?
You would say yes.
You would still say yes.
You would say yes.
Top of Jerry the tower Ryan. Top of the tower is a euphemism for something.
He would just stare into nothingness and go.
John, what did you think of the episode?
I thought this episode was great. The first time I watched, I was like, okay, that's pretty good. Watching it again, this episode was fantastic. It was very well written. It was very well acted. It was very well directed. There are things that I could nitpick about it, but they're so minor compared to how stellar everything else was. I may not even bother. I agree with you, Rick, in that, yeah, Elnor's, they're going to hit the reset and Elnor's coming back. They're going to reset the universe, sure. One of the nitpicks that I had was Elnor gets shot. Everybody else, when they have the shootout, they get vaporized. So he is just set to maim. What is that? Like, since they're going to
kill him. It wasn't calibrated anyway, for Romulans.
It should be exclusively calibrated for. But that aside, if they know they're going to kill him anyway in this episode, it would have been incredible if they had just vaporized him. Like, if all of the guns were set to red mist level and he just got blasted, that would have, I mean, yes, then you lose the opportunity for Picard to have to choose between saving the Borg Queen and saving Elnor. So you get that whole character thing.
You've got to have a death scene too, you know.
Raffi
crying over him and everything.
How badass would they be if there just wasn't one? If it was truly shocking.
Yeah.
Yes, he's coming back because time travel. But if he just got vaporized, you would have screamed whole shit. I would have screamed whole shit.
Just like. Quick dagger in the back of David Marcus is done.
Well, like when they killed Culber, and I literally screamed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe I too screamed. Oh shit! That was much oh shit about.
Scott, what about you
on that day?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good installment. Things moved quickly. The dialogue was fun. I still find myself thinking or feeling like things are moving too slow for my liking. But I think that might be a signal of how good a job they're doing this season, because I get to the end of the episode and it's like, was that all? I want more. I want to know what happens. Give me more stuff. Give me more happening. So I might just be impatient for things to move along. It's not like I feel bored or like things are taking too long in the middle of the episode. I just get to the end of the episode and I feel like the season needs to go quicker because I want more to happen. And it's quite possible that's a side effect of me having for all this time built up, oh, there's a time travel scheme and there's Q and the Borg Queen. What's going to happen? All the potential story that they have yet to tell us in this season, I'm excited for it and I want it to happen sooner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bring back Guinan and give me more of her, because we cannot have spent all this time since that episode of The View where Patrick Stewart was on and invited her to come on the show. From then up until now, all this buildup, because Guinan's coming back, it has to be more than just one scene in the first episode.
Especially with Q involved.
Well, Picard,
that's going to be a missed opportunity. If they have Q and Guinan on this show in the same season and they do not give the audience some type of
closure for that scene.
Yeah. They set it up in Q Who. Oh, these two know each other. And then in, was it Deja Q? When Q lost his powers?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Guinan stabbed him in the hand. I think that was Deja Q. So those two episodes where you have Q and Guinan interacting with each other, if they never pay that off, especially now with a golden opportunity in this season to do so, that's going to be a mistake.
I think I saw a headline somewhere that said they're going to. No, I didn't follow it up.
Cause... Well, Patrick Stewart said in that interview he had with Will Wheaton that that Whoopi Goldberg did come back to the set a couple of times after that first scene that they did with her. So I'm assuming she's in more stuff.
Well, I'm not quite as trailer averse as John, but I do try to avoid overt speculation by non-official sources. So I didn't follow up on it, but I thought I saw some kind of headline that seemed to indicate that they will indeed have a Q Guinan face off, or at least explain what the enmity is between them.
Mm. Dave, what do you think?
I thought it was a really fun episode. I mean, everything that's been echoed here, pretty much. I mean, that's been said here, I can echo. I mean, I really loved Allison Pill and the Borg Queen. That was my favorite thing of the episode. I loved the Sanctuary District. I loved, you know, I'll always say I'm a fan, service me. So give me all the Star Trek references you can, and I'll probably be happy. I hope they kill Elnor and leave him dead. I hope he's just dead. But not because I dislike the kid. I like him. I like his character, but I need damn stakes. I just do.
Space Legolas. You know
what? It's nice to have stakes, and two, I'll be honest. You know, I like the actor. I like the character fine. I don't see anything wrong with him, but yeah. I really got the feeling by the end of season one, you know, we really thought it'd be cool if we had an honorable samurai-esque swordsman Romulan, but we didn't get much farther in the characterization. We don't know what to do with this guy.
Yeah.
I really got that sense of they didn't come up with enough to tack onto his character before they started, and they were left with what I felt was kind of a milquetoast place filler. They gave them a good excuse to shoehorn some martial arts into the fight scenes when they wanted to. Mm-hmm. Well, I just didn't think there was enough to him.
His character thing is the
absolute candor.
Absolute candor, right? So he's
Drax.
He's kind of data like, right? Drax like. He doesn't get it. He gets to say the funny thing and be sincere about it. Yeah.
Yeah. We're not. But no, I
don't want him to be dead.
I'm not going to go through the plot beat by beat like we usually do on the Discovery show, because we talked about the Kirk recasting and stuff on the last show, and so we ran a little long. We don't have as much time for this episode, but I do want to talk about. I want to give all you guys an opportunity to talk about something that you anything that you wanted to mention about the show. But I have a question. In that we see a Sanctuary District, and there's a sign there that says Sanctuary District. And why are Seven and Rafi able to just leave? Because wasn't that the whole thing? You can't leave?
I don't think it had progressed to that point yet.
Armed guards? Yeah. Well, it's the same year. It's 2024.
It is the same year, but... Oh. the large-scale sealed-in Sanctuary District that we saw on DS9 was in San Francisco. So I have to assume that there are different levels of sanctuary districts. One is a ghetto style, like few city blocks that's mm-hmm. enclosed, almost like an open air prison.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one in San Francisco, that's more like this park is designated a sanctuary district. So you can set up your tents or you can set up your campers or whatever you got. Because it wasn't, bare bones buildings and streets that people were just kind of, you know, setting themselves up in. You could see it was essentially a tent city in that area, whatever it was. So it really seemed like a smaller scale, less regulated sanctuary district. More of a, hey, you got no house? You can pitch your tent in here.
Also, can you imagine Rafi and Seven actually not being able to get past a couple of armed guards? They just beat their asses and leave.
I look, Rafi was about to step up and get for Seven talking. Yeah, the writing was so good. The dialogue was so good.
It was. It really was.
Everybody had great lines. Oh, you are killing it, 2024.
Well, I love how Rafi and Seven bicker without, you know, I got a kick out of, you know, the last episode when Rios is like, we're really going to do this now. But that's kind of getting overused in Star Trek. But I love how Raffi and Seven kind of, it's almost subtextual. You can see why they broke up, and you can see that I don't know about y'all. I assumed Seven was just too robotic, but it's turning out it was Raffi who didn't want to.
See, I don't think that's it. I think they broke up because Seven can't stay still. It's an Iron Man thing. He can't stop. Yeah.
Well, they've both got their issues. I mean, Raffi's got this whole thing with her family going on. I think, and that's why the death of Elnor was so big on her, because she had almost adopted him to kind of take place of her own kids, you know, and then she loses him too. And didn't they establish that she had a drug problem last season too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She did. Yes, but she kicked it.
She was an alcoholic. They established that. I don't know that they.
No, I think the thing that she was smoking was
her,
was
some, her vape pen. She was vaping snake leaf, I think is what they called it.
There's a difference between using and it being a problem. The alcohol is definitely a problem.
Well, she went back to Starfleet, so they probably just gave her a thing. Like, oh, there you go. Well,
she didn't have a reason to quit before, so she applied herself or whatever.
The whole reason I'm making the distinction is because you can use weed there are levels of drug use, but you know, you can use certain drugs and not have a problem with them. And I don't think they showed that she had a drug problem. They definitely showed that she had an alcohol problem.
Well, then when they went to that pleasure planet and those advertisements that were supposed to be catered to them showed up, hers was for some snake leaf dealer or something, and she was
married. Went to that planet, they'd be throwing wine at advertisements at me all the time, but you know. I'm not waking up in the drunk tank every night.
Going back to what you were talking about, what you mentioned, Dave, as far as missed opportunity and Picard kind of not being the lead in the show, that was the one thing that kind of stood out to me when Elnor died. Yes, Raffi kind of adopted him over the past year, but he's known Elnor since he was a kid. You know, I would have liked to have seen a scene where he was more, and I understand he's got to, you know, the mission is the mission and he's got to pull himself together. But I would have liked to have seen him pull himself together, like to see it really affect him.
Well, see, but that's Picard's whole art this season is he's so, like, he disconnects, he compartmentalizes so much that he's like, he could shut that shit off.
That's fair.
Now, like, if we get to a point, and I, from my lips to Kurtzman's ears, but if we could get it to a point in the season where he actually does like crack a little bit and like really regret all the bullshit that he's put people through.
I mean, that's gotta, that, including Elnor. It's clearly leading up to that. That's gotta be like the end of the season. But also, it's freaking Patrick Stewart. I want to see him. I want to see him do Shakespearean acting.
Yeah. What did you guys think of the stuff with the Borg Queen and Girardi and Picard?
I love the Borg Queen. I love this Borg Queen. She's fantastic.
Yeah. Whose hand is this? Mine. That was great. That was great.
Yeah. That was fantastic.
I like that they're not going for the overt sexualization like they did with Alice Krieg. Not that I minded Alice Krieg's performance.
She has nothing below the waist, Rick.
I don't know how that was. Like, she kissed. She was like making out with Data a bit, but like, that wasn't like. I didn't feel like it was overt sexualization. That was just kind of gross.
Go back.
It's a zombie.
go back and watch First Contact again. And every move that Alice Krieger makes as the Borg Queen is meant to be sultry and seductive.
Yeah. I agree.
She infused sexuality into every frame of her performance in that movie. And there's nothing wrong with that. But that's just how she was playing the Queen. As a very, very seductive character.
Well, and it's about tempting Data with emotions.
Yeah.
She bonks Data, for God's sake.
Yeah, she does, but you know, I don't know. It was just so gross. It was so gross.
Like, well, and that's the thing, Dave. We have to keep in mind that it's the performance was not designed to try to get a sexual response from us, the viewer.
Right, right.
But it was still a sexual, seductive performance, mm-hmm. even if it's not supposed to turn us on.
What, Rick? What you cut out?
You cut out
when you saw First Contact.
He said we were all kids when he came out. And no, we weren't. We were teenagers. We were the target audience. Yeah.
I mean, it was 96.
First Contact? I was like 18, I think, when I saw it. Yeah.
I was like 12 or 13 when First Contact came out.
Oh, 96. No, 96. I was 19. So, yeah.
Anyway, I can't remember. I looked up the actress today. I haven't
seen. But that is an easy lay. I mean, every woman that's ever wanted him got him. So.
Yeah, he's just like, I'm fully functional. If that is something you want to do, let's do that.
All right, we need to record this. This is the first time that Sean ever said somebody was an easy lay on a podcast. I'm really enjoying this Borg Queen because she is in a victim position, but is absolutely in charge. And I loved when she's running around on her arms. That was hilarious and creepy and yet still awesome. I love her performance. I love the subtlety of her performance. You know, I've always had a problem with the concept of a Borg Queen. But since it is a thing and we have to accept it, I think she's doing a fantastic job, and I loved the interaction between her and Jurati. I think they play off of each other really well.
I have a question for everyone, and I wish I'd thought about it for my own show, but I didn't. I think the imagery that they keep doing with, or they have done with her, like outstretched in the Christ position, the Borg Queen, you think she's going to make the sacrifice play to get them back home?
No.
You don't think so? You don't think, because like the whole thing with Seven, how everyone's afraid of the Borg, like the redemption for the Borg actually wanting to come and join the Federation. Like, was she really on that ship to do harm?
I don't know. I think the mission may have been sincere, but I don't know that she's going to make the sacrifice. At least I hope she doesn't make the sacrifice play.
I don't think the sacrifice is the way they're going to go. With what John's saying, I think that the Borg ship, not a cube, whatever we call it, the Borg, I don't know what the Borg vagina coming through the thing,
the Borg vagina
from Borg crucifix to a Borg vagina. That's where we are on the show.
And so in the first episode with you know, a cloaked figure showing up on the bridge of the Stargazer and you know, starting to interact with the ship. I think that it was, while poorly executed, I think it is going to end up being a sincere overture from the Borg to try to make nice. And, you know, everyone panicked and they started shooting and they tried to blow up the Stargazer to stop the assimilation. I think that's why Q pulled Picard out of that moment, mm-hmm. because he's trying to teach him, look, sometimes you gotta take a second and trust a little bit. If you had held off just another 20 seconds, you would have found out that this was actually a real overture from the Borg, that they want to make peace.
That's right. Another one of the reasons I think they're going to kill the Borg Queen. That's why, a little foreshadowing, but she was stunning. Well, that one Borg Queen was stunning those dudes. I mean, I think it was
exactly, yeah,
you know, absolutely genuine.
I mentioned Neek's recaps of the shows in the Disco show, but you know, when I was reading her recap of Borg Queen,
that's what it should be called from now on. Her kneecap.
Yes. There you go, Neek. If you can read this, you're too close.
The kneecaps. Something I didn't catch that she did is that there was butterfly imagery all over the place up to the point where the clinic that Rios was in was the Mariposa Clinic, which is Spanish for butterfly, and mm-hmm. there were pictures of butterflies all over the place. And mm-hmm. she pointed out that the Borg Queen was kind of pinned up like a butterfly on display.
Mm. Yeah,
that's good. Mm.
That's good.
I'm going to throw out some trivia here before we start moving towards the close of the show. But as Seven, Rafi, and Rios beam into Los Angeles, a cover of California Dreamin' is playing. A song originally recorded by the Mamas and the Papas, Michelle Phillips once played Picard's ex-lover in We'll Always Have Paris from 1988.
Oh, yeah. That's a terrible episode.
Terrible episode, but that was a fantastic cover, by the way. I love
yeah, it sounded yeah, good.
Good. Yeah, I've heard a lot of people say that.
During a scene where a mugger tries to rob Murphy.
I'm not an original thinker, John. I have opinions that other people have. Hey,
that was me. That wasn't John, me. And I wasn't criticizing
you. And you guys sound really similar.
I was just
okay, Scott. You're not.
I was just trying to be nice to the cover and say, yeah, there have been multiple people that have said good things about it. Good on your cover.
During the scene where the mugger tries to rob Rafi, there is a large sign about Europa Vision with the Star Trek iconic tagline, "To boldly go," underneath it. And when Rios beams in, he beams in midair and falls like two stories to the ground, landing right in front of the Tipton Brothers Deli. The Tipton Brothers Deli made its first appearance in The City on the Edge of Forever. Oh. And it was an old homage to writers Scott Tipton and David Tipton, and they were artists that they were writers and artists that did a bunch of I'm doing my hands like that. They did a bunch of comic books. They did a bunch of Star Trek comic books. One of theirs is that when they did the Doctor Who crossover with Star Trek. I know I've read that one, but they've done a bunch of other stuff. So
wait a minute. The City on the Edge of Forever, Tipton, was a nod to them.
Yeah,
they
were writers on the they were writers for the show, but since then they've been doing a lot of comic books.
Yeah. Since then they did the comic book. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, gotcha. The Borg Queen has a vastly different personality than the ones that came before her, most likely due to a couple of factors. The first is that this Borg Queen is not connected to the rest of the collective. And the second is maybe due to her exploration of Jurati's mind. Maybe some of that rubbed off on her. And perhaps it's something else completely. I don't know. But just something that popped up that I thought I would share. So anybody got any final thoughts?
Yes.
Okay.
Fine. I have a couple. It looks like they're going to the tempt Jurati to the dark side, you know, kind of laying the seeds for that. I don't know how they would do that in a way that wouldn't annoy me, since that was kind of what happened to her last season. But I do like the kind of subtle, you know, what's going on with Seven that they're doing. Like she's the past is affecting her somehow too. Like they're doing a good job so far this season of, you know, doling out the story, get little bits of foreshadowing, little bits here and there. So I am tentatively optimistic about
Seven might have been a better choice. Seven might have been a better choice for probing around in the Borg Queen's mind.
No, it would have done the same reason Picard couldn't do it. Seven wouldn't be able to do it.
Seven connected herself to the collective last season, and she came out of it okay.
Yeah,
but she's not. But she's not Seven.
Well, that's true.
That's true. There's a point for either side of it. One, Rick makes a good point. She's not Seven. She's Annika. She is not a former drone, because they woke up in this alternate history, so she's fully human without her in that role,
but it's still the same person.
And she would know her mind, I would think.
Well,
because the her mind was still her mind even when she was connected to the Borg collective. So if you, if she's familiar with the, since she's from the same reality as Seven, she would have the same blueprints.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the same. It's the same person. She's just, she's playing this role that they put her in, in this, in this play that they're doing. It's still Seven.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I have to run. So thank you guys. Carry on without me. Good to see y'all. I have to blaze. But
sorry.
You're gonna go smoke some weed? All right.
Yes. More power to you.
No problem, Sean. You can stop whatever you want.
But anyway, take care, live long and prosper, etc. I gotta run. So
all right.
Later, man. I can't let it go. I can't let the fact that you said Seven is good for probing.
Could have tried.
You know, last season, Matt and I theorized that Jurati would wind up becoming the Borg Queen. Now she's back in time, would you literally say she, linked that, with the Borg Queen.
Would you say you've already won this bet, or do you think it's going to progress? Because technically she did become the Borg Queen.
Yeah, I mean, kind of, but...
Well, part of her is, yeah.
Yeah, do you guys think it might... She might wind up, again, wish I'd talked about this on my show, but...
Like full-fledged the Borg
Queen? Yeah, like I'm kind of wondering if she's going to actually become the original, like paradoxically, but will she wind up being like the Borg Queen that starts the Borg?
Well, the Borg have been around for hundreds of years. Yeah, the Borg
already exists. Now, she might be the Borg. To what?
She might. No, I mean, the Borg have been around for like since like the 1500s, according to Voyager.
She might be the Borg Queen.
Yeah, but they can time travel.
Who begins this new branch of Borg?
Yeah,
that's seeking asylum.
I think it's entirely possible, because remember that the Queen, we assume, that showed up on the bridge of the Stargazer, you know, in that long cloak and that mask. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's entirely possible we'll get to the end of the season. That mask is gonna come off.
And it's Jurati.
Yeah.
Could definite possibility.
And I don't think that was the Queen on the bridge of the Stargazer. I think that was like a drone.
And maybe it wasn't a queen. It might have been it would have been an envoy. But
it was a clockwork droid from Doctor Who.
It was
poor communication skills where she wouldn't just be bored. It's like, hey, look. It's me.
Yeah.
Don't shoot.
Yeah.
Let me explain. I
mean, all the effort it takes to try to put out those Borg tendrils to plug into the ship and say, we need power. Plug in here. Stun. Plug in. You could have just said, hey, guys, I'm really tired.
Yes.
Just listen for a second. Just use your words.
Or it's a Terminator thing, and this had to happen that way.
It had to happen that way.
So that she would go back to become the Borg Queen.
That's right.
Ish. Envoy.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm going to close things out because I have to go too. So
I have to pee, so.
Me too.
All right. I'm going to Walmart. That does it for this episode. Make sure that you head over to Patreon. Check us out. We got movie commentaries over there. We're going to be doing another one this month. Still not sure what movie it's going to be, but we're probably going to record that in the next week or so. And it's just $3 a month, or you can be a producer at $10, like Brandon Ushio, Tom Corcoran, and Dale Goodall. But thank you guys for being here. Scott, why don't you let everybody know where they can find you, but you're not doing any podcasts right now. So
you can find you
talk about your art commissions and your website.
Sure. If people want to see some of the stuff that I do as far as my side gig, then you can visit my website at www.planetrisecreative.com. Also on Twitter at planetrise. I do graphic art. I do social media avatars and banners and posters and book covers and so on and so forth. And a lot of my work is posted in those places. So if you think it looks cool, then let me know. It'll be nice to hear that it looks cool. Or if you want to do a commission, we can work out something like that as well. I pitched the idea to John of switching out the plugs, and I would plug Captain Game Show, and he would plug I'd Watch That for $1.
Ooh, the what
because
now?
Because apparently we sound so much alike, me and John, that I could have said that I host Captain Game Show, and John could have said that he's working on I'd watch that for a dollar, and then Dave wouldn't know that we had swapped because apparently
you have to sing the whole thing as though you
were. I was about to say, see, so you're gonna give me my Scott impression, then he'll be mad at me.
Ooh.
That sounds mean.
John, where can we find you?
I can never be mad at either of you. I love you both.
Aww. Everybody got you, kid. You can find me hosting Captain Game Show, the Trivia Wordplay podcast on the Infinite Potato Alliance Network. You can find all these gentlemen sometimes appearing on Captain Game Show, the Trivia Wordplay podcast on the Infinite Potato Alliance Network. And you can also find me on occasion doing this and the Cosmic Potato and pretty much any other Infinite Potato Alliance show that I get invited to be on. Yeah.
All right. Good time. All right. Dave, what about you?
If you want more Star Trek talk from me, I'm at Star Trek Universe. And if you want DC Multiverse on Film and Television Talk, I'm on DC on Screen. And if since Scott pimped out his artwork, Instagram.com/drawingwithdave, where I'm doing all the comic booky and Star Trek fan art, and I don't know what the hell else I'm doing over there, but I'm doing stuff.
taking commissions
and doing stuff.
And if you want to contact us, just head over to infinitepotato.com, click on the icon for that Star Trek podcast. You'll find links to our email, our Facebook group, and our Twitter page. That's it for this week. Be sure to join us next week. We'll talk about episode 4, which you guys say you heard what the title was, because I haven't heard.
I haven't heard.
Okay. Rick said that he had heard, and I didn't understand what he said it was.
I think it was called Seven's Good for Probing.
I think it was not.
And remember, we have another episode available this week where we're talking about the season finale of Discovery. That's also on the feed. So look for that wherever you get your fine podcast. This will be the last week that we'll be doing two episodes a week until Strange New World starts, because I think there's going to be some overlap.
Watcher.
With that, but I'm not sure.
Season 2, episode 4, Watcher.
Oh. Watcher. Okay.
According to
we'll get one of our questions answered. Mm-hmm. Who is the Watcher?
Maybe.
I'm still hoping that it's us. It's us via Q.
Until next time, remember, move backward to go forward, shatter to mend, the past is now.
Those are actually the instructions if you open up Twister.